Hey, good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick over in East Nashville. Chase
Hello.
McCabe in Bellevue on the west side.
I just wanted
to
check in before you guys ask a question, just so you guys knew I was there today.
Well,
You're
do appreciate
time.
That we do not have a story or a back and forth with someone who is not there today. So, yeah, that's a great start to the show, and as I sit here on NHL Network, and the reason that the television is on NHL Network and I'm watching the Devils and the Avalanche on ABC, by the way, the Stanley Cup Final, Ray Bourque with the Avs.
Did you know who's in the stands? You know who was in the stands for that? Is it Game 7?
I think this is Game 7. I'm almost positive.
This
is Game 7.
A young boy named Seth Jones was in the stands for that game.
Huh. Yes. I was actually going to – you didn't let me finish. I was actually going to say that.
Oh, sorry.
I was actually going to say that. I know because we've had that conversation with him. This indeed is Game 7, and it is the reason they're showing this is because this happened 22 years ago to the day. And that's why they're showing
what,
and the reason that it's on NHL Network is, and we can talk about this as well, as a show, Adam Foote, I was watching the Predators and the Penguins, and at times it was very, very tough, but I was watching it last night on NHL Network. They were showing it because it, too, was, 3 years ago to the day. Game 5 is what I was watching.
I'll tell you what, I got into a foul mood last night because I got sucked in to that game. They actually showed late last night, leading up to the actual telecast of Game 6. Game 3 will be on tonight on Fox Sports Tennessee in the Golden Classics. We're showing Game 3 and
Game
4.
Well, that was a good one.
The good ones. We're showing the good ones, Games 3 and 4, Tuesday, Thursday this week. We're also showing the simulation Stanley Cup, the virtual Stanley Cup Finals against the Flyers. I believe it's Game 3, the first game in Bridgestone Arena, which is quite the scene. So that will come your way tonight at 7 and then the Golden Classic at 8. But last night they showed, the behind the scenes, I guess, road to the Stanley Cup final, whatever they call it.
That's what I was watching.
I watched that and then I watched the game. I got sucked in and, of course, I got into a foul mood because the first thing I see is in Game 6, the Colton Sissons waved off goal. And all of this, pent-up emotion started spilling out of me. Everybody else in my house was asleep, and I'm just pacing around the kitchen, running it back, freezing it, going frame by frame, looking at the official, and I'm thinking, what in the world? I had never seen the mic'd up part of it, Peter Laviolette's conversation with Kevin Pollak, Mike Fisher's reaction to Kevin Pollak. Mike Fisher, it's so classic Mike Fisher. You're just wondering, does he drop F-bombs or expletives? And he doesn't. He's just like, are you kidding me? He's got this emotion coming at him, but he doesn't use any bad words, which is classic Mike Fisher. But what a killer. I still can't believe that happened. I understand why it happened. If you look where the referee was, you can see why he did what he did. But it's just like, how could that happen then at that moment? They were playing so well. And I think if that goal goes in, I just feel like they're going to win that game. They're going to win that game.
Well, I will admit that I just couldn't. I, for whatever reason, last night was one of those nights, and there was nothing. I mean, nothing on because I was looking to bounce. But I stayed 20 minutes. I just couldn't take it. I couldn't watch it because
I thought I couldn't watch it, and I just kept watching.
Here's what's amazing when you go back, because I watched all the stuff leading up to it, up to Game 6, and I watched the first period, and then I just could not take it anymore. But it's amazing that, and I know the coaches didn't say that, the coaches, because they showed the press conferences, I know these games are a lot closer than the score is indicating. It's crazy as how really lopsided they were at home. All the home games, minus Game 6, the first five were just how, the home team just dominated the games. I mean, that I mean, it's not like I didn't remember that.
From a score standpoint.
Yeah, from a score standpoint. I mean, the games got away from them. They weren't one goal. In other words, they weren't one goal
game
games, double overtime games.
Game one was winnable. I mean, we know the Predators came going back.
If that call goes their way, I think it's a completely different story.
I agree.
That's the exception. The other
two
the other
through
ones,
five,
you're,
two
you're
through
dead
five,
two
not
through
even
five,
close.
No question.
They just really weren't. But yeah, I mean, I didn't really reference game one because it's the same pain as game six. It's like a bad call that you know who knows if it would have changed if those calls were different. I mean, we'll never know, but. It's tough to watch. It's just tough to watch again. But I will tell you that
it was so weird. It was like Derek Mason when we forced him to watch the Ravens game from 2000. I kind of had a little Derek Mason. I'm pacing around the floor. I got these emotions that I had like stopped. I'd like put them aside until seeing that. And here's another thing that I saw, Darren, in watching the mic'd up part of it. The referees were mic'd up.
Yeah.
And so what I didn't really realize, and they don't tell you because the referees don't have a press conference and, you know, none of this comes out until way after, but they knew right away. The other three officials knew right away that puck was never secured. But it does happen in hockey, right? It's going to happen a couple of times a season. Sometimes it goes for you. Sometimes it goes against you. Where the ref loses sight, he blows the whistle, the puck goes in, the goalie never had it when you look at the replay. So I get that part. It's just disappointing. But it is amazing how the referees were kind of like, oh, boy. Oh, boy, Kevin, you missed that one, buddy. And they were like, is there anything we can do? Like, they all huddled up. Like, is there any way we can count this a goal? Because it was a goal. And they concluded, no. By rule, they blew the whistle, play's dead. Mm-hmm. And he had to skate over there and tell that to Peter Laviolette.
I hate that rule.
And Mike Fisher. But at least he admitted. He's like, hey, there's nothing I can do. I blew the whistle. I lost sight of it. So
that's
I admire him
the,
for that. It's just a killer.
That's one of those things, though, I don't understand. Like, even if you blow the whistle, if the tape shows you that he shouldn't have, I mean, I feel like that's there should be something in place where you can overturn it. And I'm saying that. You guys know why I'm saying that, and I'm coming with it because it hurt our team, hurt the Preds. But at the same time, I mean, I've seen that in games where I don't have a dog in the hunt, as they say, and I go, why is this? Why can't they overturn it? We have the technology to be able to get a play right, so why not use it?
I think they have tried. As best they can to do that. And here's what I learned after the game, because there's all these little nuances to try to protect the referees as much as they can. But if that puck had gone straight into the goal and Colton Sissons had never touched it, so Forsberg shoots it and it leaks past from the wing, Murray's clutches, right? It's just sitting there in the blue ice and Sissons dives and taps it in. If the puck had gone straight in, then they would have had the ability to count it, even if the whistle blew, because it's called continuous action. And ironically, a couple years ago, Colton Sisson scored a goal in that very fashion, where we all thought, whoop, whistle blew, no goal. It's going to happen to Colton Sisson's again. But this one went straight in without anybody touching it, and so it's a goal. But because they blew the whistle, any action that happens after the whistle, somebody tapping it in, etc., that's what didn't count. So they've tried to stretch it as far as they can, but they can't figure out how to fix that one without screwing it up. But now, I think you're right, though, Chase. It'd be nice if they'd be able to say, like, the total safety net, hey, that was an egregious screw-up. You know, the eye in the sky just says, hey, man, that's a goal.
Especially in a Stanley Cup final. I mean, you know,
yeah.
It's kind of a big deal in a game
like
six.
Like the NFC Championship game?
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, look, yeah, I know that they all count. They're all the same. No, they're not. Okay, game 36 of the regular season is not. Yes, technically it does. It's not the same as game six of the Stanley Cup final. It's not the same as the NFC Championship game. There's way more eyeballs, way more focus, way more attention on your sport. And no, it's not the same. So you would think that they would get it, make sure on those gigantic stages that even in a screw-up, they figure out a way to make it right. Because as we've seen, the backlash isn't worth it just to say, hey, sorry, we screwed up. My bad. I mean, that just doesn't work.
Here's the letter.
Yeah, right. People don't care about that. People are not interested on you falling on the sword as a league or as a commissioner or what have you and saying, hey, well, we got that one wrong. Our bad. You know, we'll work harder next season to get those calls right. No, that's not what people want to hear on those stages. They just don't. And it's just you can't have calls like the Saints-Rams game and, you know, in my opinion, what we're talking about, game six of a Stanley Cup final that – I firmly believe they go on and win that. Now, I don't know if they win game seven, but I firmly believe they would have won game six.
Would have seen it.
And they would have gone back to Pittsburgh and had a chance to win in game seven. I'm not saying the outcome would have been different. I'm saying I believe the outcome of that game was going to be different. Yeah. I do.
I do,
I do feel that way, and I have no proof of it. It's just my gut feeling is it changed the outcome of the game. And I think we got robbed of a game seven. And like I said, I have no clue how game seven would have played out. No clue. But I would have at least liked to have seen it. I would at least like to have been there and experience it and see it.
Well, and here's the other part of this, too. You have, if you have three other officials that are saying, hey, that's a goal. I mean, why do you have four officials on the ice if they can't overrule one of them? If they can't say, hey, listen, majority
because
here.
The whistle.
I know that's what we're saying. Okay,
rule.
Change it. Put something in place that can say that if the other officials see that it's a goal, they can all huddle up and say, "Hey, we got to change this. This is a goal. You missed that," and then have video to back it up. So what? There was a whistle. That's my point. That's why. See, now you got me worked up, Willie. We brought
yeah,
this.
Yeah. Well, believe me, I was there last night. I'm over it now. I was not over it last night. It kind of drudged back up all these emotions. But as I'm more level-headed today, I will make this argument. I can forgive them more for that call, more than I can the game one offside call with the skate with Forsberg. That was inexcusable to me. That was absolutely ridiculous that you can tell me conclusively his skate was off the ice for a part of the play that was as insignificant as that was to the goal being scored. That was ridiculous. You know, the rule is pretty hard and fast. They knew they made a mistake with game six, but they couldn't do anything about the rule. The rule was the rule.
Right.
In game one, they had the ability to say, hey, is this really conclusive? And should we wipe off this goal that was called a goal on the ice for this reason? And you cannot tell me. You guys remember, we watched as Peter Laviolette walked down, I mean, in the press box, no, down into the office.
He didn't walk. It was a very slow run. He stormed. Yeah, he was storming down.
Was it Ryan on the elevator with him?
Yes, you could hear him walk. I'm in a booth, and I could hear him walking by me. That's how hard he was walking down to, what is it, the was it the replay booth or the officiating?
Yeah, the replay booth, yeah, where the off-ice officials sit with all the monitors and stuff. They were in there, and they had a meeting. David Poile was in there. We were doing our post-game show, so we were still up there after everybody had cleared out. So, I mean, I'll never forget that.
Nope.
And I also never forget being on the elevator going down to do the post-game with Terry Crisp, and we were on the elevator with Elliot Friedman. And Elliot looks at me, he goes, I just looked at him, I was like, what do you think, you know? And he goes, you guys got screwed.
think about this, though.
I was like, now that makes me feel better, Elliot, because you are a neutral, you know, you're not rooting for either team, you have no dog. I was like, okay, I wanted to make sure my eyes saw what I saw there.
There are times where you watch a series, a championship series or a championship game, and it's just there's no question that the right team won, that it's a blowout, it's very cut and dry. But you look at this series overall, and there are so many what ifs. What if that goal counted? You know, and what if they take game one? What if the Sissons goal counts? Obviously you can say, what if Johansson was healthy, didn't get hurt? And that's what just stings the most. Like, if you lose, it's gonna hurt no matter what. But if you lose and you know you just, it was no chance. It was a great run, but you never had a chance anyway. I think it feels different than with what happened to the Predators, because there's so many what ifs with that series. If things go a different way, and we'll never know, and you don't want to torture yourself, but this conversation has opened up old wounds and made me think about that stuff.
I don't what if injuries, because injuries, that has nothing to do with anything, because Pittsburgh had a slew of injuries too. In fact, it's pretty interesting. watching the behind-the-scenes stuff, which it's pretty amazing how much access we have and behind-the-scenes access that we have and are around all the time and have for years, and yet I'm still fascinated by that because we're not in the room right after a game. You know, we're not in the room in intermissions. I'm close by for home games in second period, but I'm not in the room, and I enjoy that stuff. I really enjoy the behind-the-scenes access, but I don't – it was interesting how much they focused on the Nick Bonino injury for Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
It was a heavy focus on there, and I forgot about that. Not that he didn't play, but I forgot how much they talked about it and talked with him and put a focus on that in that – what is it? I'm drawing blanks on – what is it called? What were we watching, Willie? What is the official name of it?
Is it the road to the Stanley Cup?
I think
we'll go with that. I don't know if it's the whatever, but
it's the behind the scenes documentary, basically.
They
have the access in the locker rooms. They have the mic'd up players, the mic'd up officials. The radio calls, the TV calls.
Road
to the Stanley Cup.
Okay.
Yeah. They had Road to the Winter Classic, so we saw that too. That doesn't end well for the Predators either, even though it's fun to watch all the behind-the-scenes stuff leading up.
Yeah, but just the talk and the dog on a bone, the chain, like that stuff, that was fun to see.
Oh, yeah.
That stuff. And then you see, Pekka giving the chain to Freddie Gaudreau, and then he brings up, Harry Z talking trash, like, I'm coming after you. I'm coming after you. You just remember that. I mean, like, that stuff, that's awesome. Like, even though we're there, we don't even get that stuff. And I guess when we were caught up in the moment, I guess I don't remember. I watched it, but I don't remember it now as much as probably I should have, because when you live it and you go through it, you're probably not, watching the fine details. And I probably paid much closer attention last night because you're not wrapped up in it anymore. But 3 years later, and it was just cool. All the mic'd up stuff was fantastic.
Well, you forget things, and think about this too. We see a lot of things that we're not allowed to talk about at the time.
Yeah.
Now we can talk about it later, but there are some things that, I mean, we, like you were saying earlier, we see some behind the scenes stuff, but we can't always talk about it. And so this is stuff that you can, and it's like, oh yeah, I did see that. I didn't realize I had that, or I remember that. So I think that's why it's fun for you. It's fun for me too.
Where is Harry Z, by the way? What's Harry Z up to?
He's been on Ryan.
I know. Well, that's why I'm asking the question. So what's he doing these days?
I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But I just asked.
Gosh. And just remember the game four, it's like, okay, oh boy, you got them back, you clean their clock in game three, like, how's that going to go? And just the Predators just were relentless at home. They kept jumping on them early. Pittsburgh was doing the same thing. Game five, they score a minute and a half in. It's like, oh my gosh. And then they score two, too quick, and it's like, oh boy, it's just amazing. Like a couple of the games, like how fast they got away from the visiting team.
Yeah, Harry Z is working in Ontario.
Okay, good for him. By the way, as I sit here and watch Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final 19 years ago, they keep showing Jason Arnott a lot for the Devils.
Yep.
Was that that was the A line, right? Wasn't that the heyday of the, wasn't it called the A line in Jersey?
Yeah.
They were awfully good. They won it the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So they almost won back-to-back. And of course, they won it in 95 as well. So that was a heck of a nucleus of players for a long time in New Jersey.
I just remember my cousin at a family reunion having a Patrick Waugh jersey on and doing a cannonball. And we were all staying at a hotel with an indoor pool, and he's watching the Stanley Cup final, and when Colorado wins, he comes running in and does a cannonball in his Patrick Waugh jersey. Nobody knew, none of us were like, knew what was going on, but I just remember that moment.
Good stuff. All right, we'll come back with more here on this Tuesday morning. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I don't know if this is good timing by Marquise, little Bon Jovi, us talking about the Devils, the Avalanche, Game 7, 19-year anniversary of their Game 7 Stanley Cup Final. Colorado, we know, would go on to win. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Many local businesses here in Middle Tennessee are now open and ready to serve you during these times. You can help them out by visiting rocknashville.com. Once again, that's rocknashville.com for delivery / pickup options. You've got fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and much, much more. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses. That is a very good message, and we are certainly trying to do that in our household. The latest on Major League Baseball, since we departed the airwaves yesterday. Back and forth, back and forth, and you do this and you do that. And in the end, who knows, they'll probably end up right back where they started from. I don't know. I don't know where this is going. I kind of give up on where this is going. Where
I
kind of
think they could propose. They could propose, all right, we're going to give you your full salaries. We're going to play 100 games, and somebody would still complain and find something wrong with that. Yeah, I just don't. They're not going to agree at this point.
I again have decided to torture myself and read and listen to a lot of why this is happening, and I guess I have nothing else to do, which is pretty sad. At least last night I didn't. So it appears that this is what is going to happen, unless something changes. When you say back and forth, Darren, really there hasn't been any back and forth. When you get down to it,
that's the problem.
The owners have only twisted their numbers around. They have not really offered anything new for a couple months. And the players, you know, despite throwing, they did make a counter proposal that they knew the owners would never go for. And so I listened to Jason Stark's podcast, which is excellent, and he equated it to a tennis match where you serve the ball and the person doesn't try to return the serve. They just let the ball go and let it stay over there for a while. Then, you know, several weeks later, go pick up the ball and then serve it back over, and the other guy doesn't try to hit it back. Like there's no hitting the ball back and forth. Like there's no partnership at all trying to actually come up with solutions, which is so blind to everything that's going on. It is heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. So if nothing else gets done, the consensus by everybody that I trust is on this, because hey, what else is there to cover if you're a baseball reporter? So these guys know exactly what's going on. I'm talking about Jason Stark, Ken Rosenthal, Buster Olney, Jeff Passan, Tyler Kepner. I mean, these guys are all saying the same thing. If nothing happens, then they'll probably play a 50-game season starting around August 1st. And to me, that is so ridiculous and such a missed opportunity and such a slap in the face to everybody in this country that is suffering, that loves the game. That would be heartbreaking if they did that. And, yeah, some seasons better than no season. But consider this, okay? Instead of starting around July 4th, where you could have a month of being the only one of the major four playing, right? You could be saving the summer. We've been craving sports, right? NASCAR is taking advantage of it, right? The MMA and the others, they've been able to find ways to do this, and they're gaining advantages for that. Baseball is giving that up. They're going to give that up if they don't come up with a deal in the next day or two, which hopefully they will, but I don't know. But consider if they start on August 1st, okay? You're going to play a 50-game season where your least important games, and obviously every game takes on a bigger importance if you only play 50, but consider that huge games are going to be played at the same exact time, starting up in basketball and in hockey. And then by the time you get to your postseason, football is going to be going as well in theory. Right? So you're not getting any of your window for a sport that already is struggling to gain fans. They're struggling not to lose fans. And so you're going to give up this window for a couple million dollars per team? You know, give or take, each team could make a sacrifice of a couple million on each side and be done with it and then figure out all your other stuff? It's absurd. It's absurd.
Why don't you think, because to me, everything you laid out just makes a ton of sense. It's just, to me, it's common sense. I don't understand how it's so blurred. I get it. We're talking about money. It's more money than the three of us make, and, you know, okay. But in the end, like, how do you not get big picture what you're doing? What's happening here? How do you think that at this point, as we sit here on June 9th, that they're really still doing this? I mean, just think about where they are right now. I feel like at times they're negotiating, it's getting worse. Like, you know, usually the back and forth in negotiating, you're like, okay, they're getting close, they're inching closer. Yep. Oh, they're about to hit the, you know, middle ground, and everybody's going to agree and shake hands and move on, or elbow bump, or whatever we do these days, virtual shake hands. But I feel like they get worse. The more that this, every time I cringe. Hey, let's go over, let's bring in Jeff Passan. I'm like, oh, great. Yeah, I'm sure this is going to be great news.
Yeah.
Because it just keeps going the wrong way. I don't know how that's possible in these times. How are they actually getting worse at negotiating in a global pandemic? I mean, explain that to me, baseball. Tell me how that happens.
Because the two sides don't trust each other, and they haven't for a long time, and it's just another reason to fight. And it's stupid. It's only going to hurt them. I mean, it's hurting both sides. You know, I made the comment this morning with Ryan when we were discussing this that they need to figure it out so they can be America's pastime again. And he goes, well, I don't know if they've really been America's pastime for a while. And I said, you know what? You're right. Really, since 94. They hurt themselves with that and gave the NFL, you know, a lot of momentum. The NFL has ran with it and can really use that moniker now. But they're just hurting themselves even more because people, they don't have to deal with it. They can go watch something else. They have choices. There are so many more choices nowadays. And if people see baseball and the players fighting with each other over money during a pandemic, they're just going to go, okay, fine. I'll go do something else. And when I can go to a game again, I'm going to spend my money somewhere else.
There is no partnership between the two sides. That is the missing word. And this is the price that they're paying for not ever giving into a salary cap, which I get. But this is not, I've been saying this until I've been blue in the face for about a month. This is not your normal labor negotiation, right? You've got to have some scope. Have a little bit of perspective. One of every four people is out of a job. We still don't know where this is going. It's going to take a lot of time to come out of this, and it's nobody's fault. There's a pandemic, but you have to understand that. And you're going to dig in on the principle of you thought you had a deal on March 26th,
right.
And so as a matter of principle, you're not going to come off of that. I mean, just wake up.
What changed
real.
Since March 26th?
This is for one,
everything.
This is for one day. Yeah, and this is for 1 year. This is not a 10-year deal for labor negotiations. This is to get through this season, which is abbreviated to start with.
Yeah.
And so now you think that the fans are just going to come back in droves when you come back? You got a lot more problems in the next couple of months, making a few hundred grand less or a couple million dollars less. It's easy for me to say, but it's really not when you get down to it.
And they're just creating more problems.
Because so the players would get their deal, basically, of, hey, we said we would agree to a prorated salary based on the amount of games played. So that's where they've come up with the 50, right? So if they play 50, then the players can say, oh, good, yeah, okay, we get our 50 games worth of salary.
Wasn't
so
that the same
budge.
As the 82-game proposal, 50%? What's changed?
No. Well, the owners, that's where the owners changed the game. That's where this all started, is opposed to the 80 games. They had that sliding scale of a percentage of that, and that's where the players have just dug their line in the sand and said, we had a deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, things change.
So it's basically the owners are saying, well, how many games do you want to play, right? But this is the money that we have to pay you guys. We can pay it over 75 or 80 games, or we can pay it over 50 games. And if it's 50, then yes, it's the prorated that you guys thought you agreed to. But that's just so sad. A 50-game season? Are you kidding me? In baseball?
I know. Like,
the Nationals were 19-31 after 50 games last year. They won the World Series. That's not how baseball works. You got to play more games to have a true indication of who deserves to win a championship.
Well, let's
and
not,
you have the control of doing that.
Let's not kid anybody. There's not going to be a true indication this year, no matter what happens. That's already been tossed out the window.
But you got to make it the best you can.
And
you
run over.
You
well, what, 76 games? Nothing they
That'd
come
be
up
better.
With at this point as we sit
it's
here
on
June 9th that they're gonna, that's even going to come close. The best
a month can make
they
a
could
lot
do
of difference.
Would be half a season. The best. And that's probably right. a long shot right now. Is half of
I also
regular
they should
season.
Be talking about creativity. They should be talking about double headers. They should be talking about neutral sites for a postseason if you needed to go into November. They could be talking about all these things. That would be great. But no, we can't even get off of the owner said, hey, we agreed. We agreed on March 26th that we could prorate its salaries. That's it. That's just I mean, think outside the box, have some scope, have some perspective. And it's not just the players, it's the owners too. You gotta give a little bit. You got to show that you understand what's happening in the country, and you could be part of a process to get back. You're making a sacrifice for the good of everybody. Think about all the workers that are sitting around waiting for you guys to play so that they can make a living, you know, on a per-game basis. We know personally a lot of people that are waiting so that they can work games. We've gotten to know them over the years. They go everywhere. They're at Memorial Gym. They're at Bridgestone Arena. They're at Nissan Stadium. They're wherever there's a game.
Concert, games. I mean,
they
all
need
this
events.
Stuff. Yes.
They need events, right? And I'm not talking – I mean, I know there's no fans, but there are still workers that would benefit from playing. Think about those people for 5 minutes. Come on. I mean, think about this too, guys. This is another thing that Jason and Doug Glanville, who's excellent, by the way, discussed on their podcast. You know who the head of the union for the NHL players is? You guys know.
Yeah,
Donald Fehr. Mm-hmm. Right? Who oversaw the union when they shut down in 94 in the World Series. All right, so here's a guy that will take a hard line. Donald Fehr now heads up the NHL. They're working it out, right? They have a partnership, okay? And you can sit there and say, well, yeah, they sat out a whole season. They sat out another half a season. So they've had their issues. But when the pandemic hit, they sat down and they're like, this is nobody's fault, right? Let's work it out. Let's see what we can do. They're still working through some of the details, but there has not been any adversarial talks between the two sides. There's been questions asked. They've tried to address the questions. There are a lot of very difficult questions. But they have a partnership, right? And that is because of the revenue sharing. And, yes, I know it's like the worst word you could use in baseball, a salary cap. You know, the world continues to turn in the world of sports. Some sports have salary caps, and it's okay. Things, you still get paid pretty well. So it's not the worst word. It's not a taboo thing for a sport to have a salary cap because you have a partnership. The more money the league makes, the more money there is for the players. The baseball players have had it pretty good. Just get through this year. And then come back, fight if you want after 2021, when a lot of this is in the rear view, hopefully. I can't believe it. It is heartbreaking. It's so frustrating, I can't even begin to describe it.
Yeah.
Donald Fehr and the hockey guys, they have a partnership. You would have laughed if I told you that in 1994. You know, Donald Fehr is going to be part of the hockey. He's going to be leading the hockey union, and there's actually going to be a good labor piece, a good partnership between the players and the owners in hockey. You would have scoffed and said, yeah, good luck with that.
Are you saying maybe
they're working it out?
He learned something from 26 years ago?
Yeah. But you know what baseball's doing? They're listening to Scott Boras. Scott Boras, the most self-serving guy in the game, is influencing a lot of players saying, take the hard line. The games can't be played without you. All those old bromides that were once very important because the players for decades were underpaid. They were exploited. They couldn't get to free agency. And the union is to be commended for all of the fights that they had. But this is different. This is not 1976 when they earned free agency. This is not even 1981 or 1985 when they had labor problems. This is way different. The fifth starter on a baseball team makes $10 million. Okay, that's a pretty good deal when you have a 4.50 ERA and your record's 10-10.
Not a bad living.
You know, you got it pretty good.
Yeah, I'd be all right doing that.
You can make it. You can get through. You can get through 2020 with a percentage of your salary. You can
support your family. You can. We got faith.
You can make
it
through.
You can do it.
So you would worry about
it. But go ahead.
Play
your 50 games while everybody else is playing in the market. Think about a Boston fan. All right, just take that for example. The Red Sox are playing. The Bruins and the Celtics, who both have very, very good teams, are also going to be playing some huge games. Let's just take the month of August. There's going to be flooded, you know, sports on TV everywhere. So you're saying that, you know, baseball is going to take the spotlight while that's going on? Well, they'll have their fans, but some people are going to watch the Bruins, and someone are going to watch the Celtics if they're in playoff games, right? They may not watch the Red Sox as much. Now, if you started in July, you'd have a way to get the runway going, and you'd have more people in the beat of a season. It's just ridiculous that the short-sightedness that they're going about this with.
Let's see if you two can nail this one. I want you to give me the two biggest baseball stories from June 9th of 2019 to June 9th of 2020. What are the two biggest Major League Baseball stories we've had in a calendar year?
The two biggest stories.
Who would have been the two biggest
year.
Stories
the Astros
to this point?
Cheating.
Chase yes. is, let's survey, says, ding, number
gonna,
one.
I'm going to reach up and grab that apple.
Okay, what's number two on the list?
Number two on the list, the Red Sox cheating?
No, it's what we're talking about right now.
That's
I mean,
what I was
it's basically
say, it's
cheating.
Dispute.
Cheating is number one on their biggest stage.
And then labor dispute. Okay,
and a labor dispute. That's the two big stories we have in Major League Baseball in the last year. That's what they've got to hang their hat on. That's their two biggest headlines. A labor dispute in a global pandemic and cheating. League-wide, big-time cheating. Astros, big time, with two World Series under their belt. That's what baseball right now is hanging their hat on the last calendar year, of their two biggest headline grabs. And here they are, and here they sit, and this is what we get every day. You would think at some point somebody in a room or on a Zoom or something would stand up and say that. Like, guys, do you understand, like, our biggest stories we've had are all bad? Like, they're all negative. Nothing is good. Nothing is shedding this sport in good light. Like, maybe we should probably change the narrative. I mean, just thinking out loud here. Maybe we should get past this and maybe change the storyline, change the headline for Major League Baseball, because every time anybody talks about our sport right now, it's been nothing but bad. Like, how about we do something about that? You know, I would think somebody on a Zoom call would do that.
But they're more
That's
worried
just
about the money. It's all about the money.
Which tells me that, honestly, if and I'm not disagreeing at all. I'm just saying, to me, with what I just said and with what you just said, it just tells me then clearly both sides don't give a damn about anybody but themselves. I guess they don't care about the fans. They don't care about their image. They don't care about anything but themselves. I'm talking about both sides.
They're the
period. That's all they care about. Because
right.
if they don't have any self-awareness,
if they cared about themselves, they would care about getting on the field. Because if they don't get on the field, they are hurting their ability to create revenue in 2021, 2022, 2023. Because this will have a lasting effect.
Yeah,
if
and the TV
are turned
money.
Off. If the people are turned off, and you start off on the wrong foot on August 1st, and everybody else is playing, and everybody's excited about watching those sports and not as excited about baseball when you're fighting to hang on to fans anyway, then that's going to affect the revenue. And people, when they come back and they saw all this, how you handled yourself when there's a lot of people struggling to work, well, they're just going to come right back to the park. You don't think there's going to be a problem there for a while? Might not think about that.
You know, I'm going to tell you, this is, by the way, I feel like just kind of what you were talking about, the way people are going to react to this when it's all said and done. I'll give you a prime example. This is in the last 3-4 days. I'll tell you a conversation that took place in this house about exactly what we're talking about and maybe what baseball needs to hear about what's to come. I'll tell you about that on the other side as we'll come back and close out hour number one of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So every year at the end of this month, it's our anniversary, so we always take a trip, just us. Leave Maddox behind, and we go somewhere. Usually, it's a baseball theme. Last year, you know, we went to Denver, Colorado. We had a blast in Denver. We went to two Rockies games. The great Tony Kemp got us down for batting practice. The Astros and the Rockies played. Got to hang out with him before the game. Sold-out game. Had great seats. Also went to the Dodgers and the Rockies. Sold-out game. Great atmosphere. Fun baseball games. We had a really good time. This year, ironically, six months ago, we had decided we were going to go back to New York City. We had not been there. The last time we were there was the final year of Yankee Stadium and Shea Stadium. They both, remember, they went into their new ballparks together. So their last year was both. And so we had never been to either one. And so we went to both parks. In fact, I went to a Yankees-Indians game, and I saw Willie's Mets and Porth's Reds at Shea Stadium. Beautiful place, by the way. I'm shocked they were moving out of that place.
But we had a great time. I went there, too, really, really surprised. Thought they had more years left in it.
How could they be looking for a new home? But we're like, you know what? Let's go back to New York City. There's a lot more we can do. Obviously, it's so big. There's so much to do. Let's do a fun trip back to New York. Let's go to the new ballparks. And ironically, both teams were at home, and we'll make that our trip. Well, clearly that's not going to happen this year. That trip has been canceled. And we actually were just talking about this. So that trip's not we're not going to have that trip this year. It's just, you know, like what we're talking about. It's just unusual times, unusual circumstances. It stinks, but because of what we're going through, that trip this year is just not happening. We're not going on it. So
same reason I canceled mine.
Yeah, we'll try to pick it up and do it again next year, hopefully. I mean, that's the plan, full steam ahead. At the end of June next year, we'll have a trip. But here's the caveat to it, and this is the twist to what we were talking about. The conversation we just had, it's already creeping into the conversation. It's already, at least in our household, I brought it up. I said, you know what? Like right now, I've got such a bad taste in my mouth about baseball. As much as I love it, as much as we love doing these trips and going to games, and it's so much fun, and how much we love baseball because our son is involved in it. You know what? I don't even really – I would be perfectly fine if we just did something else next year. Like, we had a blast. 10-year anniversary, went to Jamaica. We loved Jamaica. It's like, well, let's do something like that or go somewhere else we haven't been. Something that doesn't even involve baseball. I'd be perfectly fine with that. So if I'm having that conversation already right now, don't you think what do you think is the ripple effect? This is kind of what we've been talking about this hour. How do they not see what the ripple effect is going to be? You think we're the only ones? You think we're the only ones when the dust settles, when the smoke clears, they're going to look at Major League Baseball and just shake their head and walk away? I'm not saying we're walking away for good. It's kind of like our statement. Just like, you know what? Fine. You think we're entitled to go see your games on our anniversary trip? Well, we'll just go do something else. That's fine. It's fine by me. It's clear you don't care. Why should I care? Why should we care? So we'll go do something else fun that doesn't involve your sport. You think we're the only ones that are going to have that conversation?
I think not.
And I think already it's been eroding a little bit. If they look themselves in the mirror, I think they've been blinded a little bit. The revenues are at an all-time high. So the game financially is very healthy because it's become more global. They have learned expertly how to work regional networks, how to work worldwide broadcasts in, the merchandising across the globe. They've done really well there. You know, all these new platforms, MLB.com and the highlights and everything that you can do, they've done a great job there. But the heartbeat is still people coming out and watching the games at the park. And they better not mess with that. And they've got to continue to have people coming up through the ranks, playing the game in big numbers. I'm going to be the last guy they're going to worry about, right? I'm going to watch. I'll be the last guy to stop watching. But I know that I can't keep a lot of people, just like in 1994, from saying, I'm done. And there will be a price to pay if you do this.
I think there's a difference, though, in watching and then actually spending money to go to the games. Like, how many people will still watch and keep up with it on TV? But then, hey, you know, let's use me, for instance. You know, my team, the Braves. That's an investment whenever I go because I have to spend gas money to drive, you know, 3.5-4 hours to Atlanta. I have to find a place to stay. So there's a hotel room. I have to find a ticket. I have to, you know, whatever I end up buying at the ballpark, concessions, beer, what have you. I mean, that's a good chunk of change that, you know, I spend to go watch my team play. And I do it because I love baseball and I love the Braves. But as I listen to them, you know, bicker over money, I mean, am I, like Darren, going to be maybe a little less inclined to do that for a while? And I love Truist Park, as it's called now, and the Battery in that area of Atlanta that they've built. But I think you're going to see them run into some of that because people are just going to be – because there are so many baseball fans that aren't in a baseball market that do have to, you know, make that investment and drive or fly or wherever to go see their team. I mean, I planned an entire trip around baseball. That was the whole reason I was going to L.A. I've never been to L.A., but the whole reason I was going was for baseball. I was going to see the Padres, the Angels, and the Dodgers. And the Dodgers were ironically playing the Braves.
And I've done that trip, by the way. That was one of our anniversary trips, and it was so cool.
Yeah, and I remember telling you about that trip, and you're like, Chase, you're going to love it. That's going to be a fun trip for you because your team's playing, so that adds to it. But to get to knock out all three in one trip is going to be awesome. And I was telling others, and people are saying, oh, Petco is one of my favorites. That's going to be so much fun. And because of coronavirus, it didn't happen. But it's like, you know, for a while I was thinking, okay, well, I'll just try and do it next summer. Well, I mean, maybe I will, maybe I won't. But that's the thing that I think they're going to run into is just attendance and people wanting to spend the money to go. And because they're sitting there bickering and fighting and going to lose a lot of a season or maybe the whole season because they can't come up with a deal. And Jeff Passan just tweeted a whole thread and ended it with, my head hurts. Please just play baseball. And I think that's how we all feel.
I don't blame him. People are – it's very clear. People are over it at this point. Like, it was one thing.
Nobody cares.
Now everybody's completely over it.
Whether you get your prorated salaries. Nobody cares whether you get your prorated salaries or what you agreed to. You can't even agree on what you agreed on March 26th. Nobody cares. They just want to see you play. And if you don't, there's going to be consequences. Even if you just play 50 games, I'll be really disappointed. If you had the ability to play 80, you've already squandered the chance to go out there on July 4th, which I still think, you know, these guys are in pretty good shape. I know they've been working out. I don't know why you couldn't speed it up and still be ready to play on July 4th. I don't know why you couldn't talk about playing some doubleheaders. You've already talked about an expanded thing. There's so many things you can do to get at least a half a season in, and you're just going to sit on it as a matter of principle. You got to play 50 games to get your prorated salary. No.
Yeah. And then you got, and then you have other sports that have figured it out, like NASCAR. And then Dana White was just literally on ESPN announcing Fight Island in Abu Dhabi. And
I just got that email. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have UFC 251 on Fight Island, which was something that
July
11th from all of this. Yeah. Yeah, a month away. And baseball and the players can't figure out, you know, a price and figure out how to get a season going. You know, and the players keep wanting to say, well, we agreed to a pay cut. A lot has changed since March. When we started working from home and doing our shows from home, I know at least, I'm not going to speak for you guys, but I know I was like, all right, a month later, we'll be back. And then it changed. And now it's like, we're still here 3 months later. There was a lot that changed. So you kind of have to just take it at this point and realize that you're going to have to make some concessions, but they don't seem to care.
We will come back and start the second hour.
Listen to Scott Boras. Just keep listening to Scott Boras. He's really got a good scope. Just keep listening to him. That's a great idea.
When I think perspective, I definitely think, and the good of the game, I think Scott Boras. Or not.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll come back. Hour number two, Chris Lowe from ESPN. We'll start a conversation with him on the other side. Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.